Did you know the energy saved by recycling one aluminum can could run your TV for 3 hours? One can. 3 hours. That's 6 episodes of me. I like this recycling thing.
Hello and welcome to Gamer Era, the show where the action is thick and fast, coming at you. It's going through the screen, it's exploding. Look out!
Oh no,
there's action! Action's happening! How are we doing this week? How's the week in gaming been, David?
Well, I've been involved in a class action lawsuit because I set up totally legit Willy Wonka outfit that unfortunately
the Wonka warehouse.
This will be, by the time you hear this, it'll be like 5 weeks since the Wonka warehouse, but I'm obsessed with the unknown.
Yes.
Yeah.
By the time you hear this, there'll probably have been many more layers announced about this, but from our perspective, it's been about a day since the Willy Wonka experience opened in Glasgow, and it's just been kind of like all that you see on Twitter, to the point that people are making the sort of meta jokes about it where they're like, it's the 97-year-old diner that still serves Coke the old-fashioned way. What opinion gets you in this situation? But it is like, it's so good. I think what's especially captivating people about it is that it's like, it's the culmination of like the AI grift as well. All the posters for it were like this AI-generated stuff with just nonsensical captions. For anyone who doesn't know, who's maybe listening to this like way in the future, there was a Willy Wonka like unlicensed, he's called like Willy McDuff. Big Joe Hoops energy in Glasgow, and it was like these adverts went out. It cost £35 or it was like $50 or something. And it went out of these really weird looking adverts on Facebook, and there was apparently some guy on like the subreddit, the like Glasgow subreddit, that was like this looks dodgy as fuck, and like I don't want to be like I told you so in like 2 weeks, but I told you so. But yeah, they were advertising it as this like amazing immersive experience, and then people got there and it was like this gigantic like vacant warehouse. There's like a print that somebody put on the wall of like the chocolate river with the lollipops, but it's like way too small for the section of wall they put it on. It's taking up like a tiny like border on the inside. There's the Oompa Loompa, the single Oompa Loompa in a green wig, who's just sitting at like a table that people have called the Oompa Loompa meth lab, because it's just smoke everywhere and she looks absolutely done. All the actors involved have been like talking quite freely about it, because it's like, well, these guys clearly have no connections, so like we could chat our shit. a lot of them were getting offered like £500 for like 30 hours work, which is like, you know what, decent job. But all the script was all AI generated, so it was all like the reactions of the audience were baked in, which is my favorite part. It was like, it's like whenever people ask AI to like write a story or write like a short passage, and like it always fucking ends with like, and everyone is so excited with the wonder of the situation, and they talk amongst themselves rapturously. And it's like, even if like you didn't tell them to like conclude the story, it always concludes the story of it being like, and everyone was having a great time and chatting excitedly. And it's I love some of the stuff they pitch. They have a bit where they're like blowing bubbles, and then one of the things is just like, oh, and then Wonka can catch a bubble and be like, oh, and you could keep a dream in here. And then it like ascends to the ceiling and like a shower of sparks comes down. It's like, what did they think they were gonna do for that? It's like true grift, and also just, I don't know, just like unchecked optimism on their part that they could just like do it. The other thing as well was that they were meant to go to like one of the parts of the script was that they go to like a lemonade river, and then they're like, there's like jelly bean fields or whatever, and the way they interpreted it was just like selling not selling, but might as well have been giving kids like a quarter cup of like lemonade and a single jelly bean, which like perfect.
Can I read to you, this is from Popgrave,
Please.
Stand-up comedian hired to play Willy Wonka at the widely criticized Willy Shocked Experience.
Yes.
Breaks his silence.
Yes.
Okay. I'm constantly applying for more acting jobs and comedy work. Then I get a phone call saying, congratulations, you're going to play Willy Wonka. We will send you over the script and dress rehearsal this tomorrow.
Yeah.
The script was just 15 pages of AI-generated gibberish of me just monologuing these mad things. At the end of my monologue, I was supposed to suck up the unknown man with a vacuum cleaner. I asked them if they had a vacuum cleaner, and they said, and this is a quote, yeah, we haven't really got there yet, so just improvise.
Oh my god.
The unknown man.
That is definitely, I mean, it's my favorite bit as well, but you've definitely gravitated to this point where they walk up to a mirror and this guy comes out in like a black bodysuit and they're like, oh no, it's the unknown. It's the man that lives in the walls and
the evil
steals
chocolate
all the
maker.
Chocolate or something. Yeah,
it makes evil all the... chocolate maker. He's got the evil chocolate.
It's like, what the fuck? And all the kids are like, no, when he comes out, like, it's, everyone in the comments is like, you can hear their voices breaking, like, they're about to, like, fucking burst out into tears. Oh, it's incredible. It's like, incredible. I can't put my finger on it. People have been comparing it to, like, when Mr. Krabs makes the, like, kids, like, theme park or whatever, and it's just a bunch of, like, it's just a bunch of swings and stuff that are falling apart. It feels... Oh, it's like the mattress world they do in The Simpsons, where the kid comes out. It's like, it smells weird in there. And he's like, no, it doesn't. Oh, it's great.
But, you know, speaking of Fanomanias, one thing I played was Westlife Fanomania, which is this PS1 game where...
From a company called Runecraft.
Runecraft.
That's my favorite. The Wizard.
The Wizard generated Westlife Fanomania, a PS1
sure
game
did.
Where you just answer questions like, what's Niall's favorite, or I don't know what it's called now, or what's Shane's favorite chicken dish, or like, what was Steve listening to when he got, it's all this stuff. I also played, for the first time since 2013, I platinumed a game on my PlayStation.
Oh, okay.
That was what
it wasn't
to
one
eat.
Of those like fucking cookie clicker tap
no.
the bottle of milk 1,000 times and get a platinum game.
No.
Okay.
It was What Remains of Edith Finch. And
oh.
Yeah, so I played that it was obviously I played like one scene because it's only like an hour and a half long. Mm. But I played that and then I realized that like there was only like 12 trophies and I had like 9 of them, so I just went back the next day and just got the 3 I was missing, or the 2 I was missing, so I got the platinum. And I've also, spurred on by our chatter, last time I picked up Football Manager 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm used to playing like Football Manager Touch, which is basically like Football Manager, but they take out all like the hard bits. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay. I'm ready for like the big boy leagues now. I'm ready for like the, you know, the big experience.
Mm.
And I got the under 21 job with the Greek national team.
Mm.
And I realized that the thing about international football is you only play like matches maybe like twice every 5 months. Mm. Whereas like club football, you're managing like every week. So I would basically like play 2 games and I had to go through like 15 rotations of this, like, you know, in-game calendar where like it saves every like 2 weeks. It's really slow because it has to save. Nothing happens. I'm just clicking like next again and again and again.
Mm.
And because I don't have like, the proper like license to coach, I couldn't get any other jobs. So I was like stuck in this loop of like, you know, I can manage 2 games every like half an hour.
Mm.
And then I have to just keep going through menus. So that was good fun. But nothing really came close to you know, running this really, really good Wonka experience.
Mm.
I imagine for you there might be some experiences that didn't come close either.
No, not really. There was just a Virtual Boy emulator that dropped on the 3DS. Finally! Oh my god, I've been like crazy for that. I'm quite, this week's topic for me at least wasn't so dependent on me playing the games because Yeah, I got fully sucked into that. I've been sitting there with a Virtual Boy folder on my 3DS since I homebrewed it. And it's like, there was like an emulator that was ready back in 2017 called like Red Dragon with a 3. But it like quote unquote functioned, it booted games, but like they barely ran at full speed. It was all like garbled. And crucially, there was no 3D. Mm-hmm. But somebody rebooted that project, and I guess over the course of a year or so, they reworked it using the base, and then they just suddenly released it with like all retail games running at full speed, which is so rare for like an emulator to just like come out the gate like that. So I've been going back through, because I played a few Virtual Boy games through RetroArch on Wii U, mainly because I like how the gamepad feels for that kind of thing. The Virtual Boy has dual D-pads, so it actually translates quite well to like a dual stick experience. It's like I said in the Playdate episode, it's quite fun that you have a black and white handheld that's so high resolution. The Wario Land sprite in particular is like absolutely massive. It's like so much detail. It's even higher res than, you know, like a GBA or something. It's just like crazy. And it's widescreen as well. I don't think it's quite 16:9, but it's like close enough that you're like, whoa, this feels crazy. But experiencing them in 2D through that format is genuinely nothing compared to the 3D effect. It's seriously transformed a bunch of the games I'd like played around with and been like, oh, these are like fun diversions. But getting them with like an actual convincing 3D effect is like awesome. Like Virtual Boy Wario Land in particular does a lot of stuff that a lot of 2D, a lot of like, you know, the 3D classics and stuff that Nintendo did. It does a lot of stuff that those games didn't do. Like there's like the blocks have like multiple layers to them rather than just being like a layer that's further out in the foreground. So you have like, you know, imagine you've got like a Mario block and then you can see like the front of it, but then you can also like the sides are like on a different plane and the top's on a different plane. So it like it is actually like popping out quite convincingly. And then there was I've just been having a really good time of it. And the red color scheme actually quite helps it goes well against the black, because the thing I was worried about was that the 3DS typically has this weird like ghosting issue where if you have anything on a black background, you tend to get like a sort of double image in 3D. But this stuff doesn't seem to suffer from that as much. I don't know like what causes it. I don't know if it's just an optical illusion from, you know, if something's sufficiently dark around it and you just get a natural double image or what. But yeah, the 3D is really nice. The performance is great. So I've been properly playing Virtual Boy Wario Land. I'm nearly finished with it because it's quite a short game. But I'm a big fan of the Wario Land games in general. I will talk about them at some point if I can find a particularly good angle. I'm like itching to play Wario World in particular because it's both very short and just also very strange, which I found are a good combination for games to talk about on this show. And I also haven't properly played it. I have a Japanese copy, but I never set my Wii up properly to like play it right. Like I tried to play it one time, but I didn't have the Japanese characters installed, so I was like going up to the characters and they were all just speaking in boxes, which didn't quite feel like, or it was like boxes and like weird punctuation symbols, which didn't quite feel like the intent. It just got a bit distracting, and like the UI was all weird because of that as well. But I should load that up on my very legit HD GameCube and see how that is. But yeah, I've been having a great time. And there's we will have a Virtual Boy segment of some description. I was saying it to you in the DMs, but like Waterworld in particular is such a gamer era game because it's like on this really obscure platform that like bombed on its ass. It's from Ocean, who are like these crazy, this like gigantic European software house that would just like pump out all these like really wretched license titles and like weird conversions and stuff like that. And it's also Waterworld. It's like the lone movie licensed game on the entire platform, and it's like based on the massively overfunded box office bomb starring Kevin Costner. It's gone basically completely forgotten in the years since. I just think that trifecta is like so powerful. So I might need to like actually watch Waterworld and like do a little movie corner or something about it, because I've never seen it myself. I've just, it's one of those ones where I've heard the aura around it. But yeah, that's where I've been at this week. Wow. Cool. The Wonka stuff got my energy up way more than I was expecting. That rolled.
Okay, so this is kind of like a spiritual successor to one of yours in a way.
Yeah, we've ended up with weirdly, it wasn't really that intentional, but as you'll see through the episode, we've ended up with probably the most synergy we've had in the set of topics. I think our brains are just in the same sort of space.
So this is kind of like, this is both like a kind of spiritual sequel to your James Bond and also a prequel to what you will be talking about. Only my one, it doesn't really have that much connective tissue, really. It's kind of more that like I played some games based on something I loved as a child, and I was like, wow, that's kind of weird, it's kind of fun. And I was like, you know, let's just I'll give these a look. So like, you and I are very familiar with Action Man. And if people don't know who Action Man is, he's basically like Britain's answer to G.I. Joe, in the sense that he is literally just G.I. Joe. They bought the license and they were like, we can't call him G.I. Joe, we gotta call him Action Man. That was in the 60s though, so you know, anything went. The Action Man in these games and in like the stuff the games are based on is like a world away from those Action Men as well, because the Action Man in the 60s was like, you know, watch him as he parachutes into like the World War and his eyes move, whereas this is like,
that's right, that's what the action was, right? You could put your finger in the back of his head and make his eyes look back and forth. It's incredible. That was the action.
Listen, that was the action. People were impressed by anything back then. And they had like really like weird like textured hair, like the hair was like, I think it might have been like some kind of felt or something, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Whereas like this Action Man's like, you know, he's like a superhero basically. He's like an arch nemesis and stuff. Who was Dr. X, who is a cyborg with mutton chops.
Yeah.
Robot Attack, which we'll talk about later on as well, is a movie that has this villain who's a master of disguise. Okay, he's a master of disguise. He can look like anyone. His name is No Face. Gosh. But and we're going to talk about the Robot Attack game later on. He's not in the game. It's like a really weird like omission they make from the whole narrative that No Face isn't in there. Although in the movie, it's not really too much anyway. There's this one guy who was like just made of ice, and he had like a big ice club. It was all this like shit, basically designed to get kids to buy.
Yeah, you
figures basically. It's all like toyetic.
You skipped a few beats. It's sort of like when Action Man originally debuted, like you said, it was like a sort of G.I. Joe, quite realistic combat thing. And then they did this big, I read up about this a few months back, so this is all kind of off the top of the dome, but like, they did this big relaunch in the 90s, and they went with much more of like a sci-fi theme. So it's like, he's going to bases, he's like foiling nukes, and it's like chemical weapons and stuff like that, and all this like crazy sci-fi shit. And then, yeah, like you say, he's got his arch nemesis, Dr. X, who's like a cyborg.
He's got one giant arm.
Yes. He has a sidekick called like Gangrene or something.
Professor Gangrene, yeah. And yes. No Face. And there's also Tempest. Tempest, who's like a guy who just controls electricity with a big lightning rod.
And the main thing was like, all the toys would have like weird gimmicks and stuff, so it would be like you'd have the classic like the color of their clothes changes color in water, or they glow in the dark, or I'm trying to think about what some of the other ones were. I mean, No Face's one was that he had like bandages, but then you take them off and he'd have this really disfigured face underneath.
And he came with an Action Man mask as well, because I heard that one.
Yes,
one I really loved. I think it was a Gangrene figure, but it had like slime parts of the body, so like you could like poke like its chest, and there'd just be like a little bubbles of slime, like kind of like, you know,
yeah,
kind of ripple out. It was really cool. It was like really innovative, like stuff. I don't want to be like, you know, standing for capitalism, be like, you know, it's so quaint that like, capitalism used to be like, you know, this thing that used to put effort into like doing this kind of shit. But it's so like weird looking back that there was a whole range of like games based on a toy that had like what, like we like, had two animated series at like that point into Tiger's Innocence, and like it had like three, I think, 45 minute long. It's, one of them's like 20 minutes, I think, animated like promotional films. But I want to look at three of these games because there are several, I'm gonna say several, it's like seven, which is still a lot if you think about it. I don't have like seven,
episodes of Gamer Era. Yeah.
There isn't. Not yet. You have to edit this every single time, being like, there's not eight episodes.
The amount of Action Man games thinks to exponentially increase.
Most of them were like PC games, like Action Man, Radon Island X, Action Man, Jungle Storm, and Action Man, Arctic Adventure. The two I'm talking about in terms of the console releases were both on PC and PS1. I'm talking about the PS1 version now. And then there's like a game called Action Man Search for Base X on Game Boy Color, which I didn't play, but I looked at it. It's a Game Boy Color game. And it's a sidebar. I was reading Search for Base X's Wikipedia page, you know, just because there was nothing really else to read.
Sure.
And there's a one critic who's excited on like the reception thing. And like they reviewed this site, like it's for IGN, and they were like, they compared it negatively to the Mega Man franchise. So I'm really intrigued to see like what, like the connection there is between Search for Base X and Mega Man. But anyway, Action Man, and this is the first games I want to look at. Okay, the first two games are kind of connected because they share a developer. So they are Action Man Operation Extreme, which is also called Action Man Mission Extreme. I think, I don't know if it's like, you know, America gets one title or it's like, you know, they just use two titles. And there's Action Man Destruction X, and they're both by Blitz Games, which we'll get to. But they have different publishers, which we'll also get to, because I'm really confused as to why one has a different publisher. But and they both come out. One comes out, I think Operation Extreme comes out in 99 and Destruction X comes out 2000. So as you well know, Blitz Games was, of course, the brainchild of the Oliver twins. They have Dizzy and Glover fame. At the time, it was called Interactive Studios Limited, and is now, of course, dead. And it's so weird, like weird to look at, like looking at the path from Dizzy to Action Man to like iCarly the video game, and select versions of Epic Mickey 2. And what appears to be their final game. I don't know if you know what the final game of Blitz Studios was. It's not really a game. It's a 3D animated interactive alarm clock app for phones.
Right.
But the gimmick is it's a Shrek themed 3D interactive animated alarm clock for phones. It's called Shrek Alarm.
Okay.
Yeah, it all comes back to Shrek. Anyway, so the games had separate publishers. Operation Extreme, and this is going back, it's another throwback, was published by what is now some form of Atari. I don't know if it's like the main Atari brand, I don't know. But at the time it was Hasbro Interactive Limited. And they had just published stuff like MechWarrior 3. I don't think it went on to publish MechWarrior 3 and Civ 2. But that's not the interesting collaboration here. Because Destruction X, despite being like based on a Hasbro property, so you think like maybe like Hasbro just, you know, publish the other Action Man game. The 3DO company published a PS1 version of Action Man. And at this point, they were just publishing like fantasy games and licensed football manager games, which are really weird. There's like a lot of ones that's like just named after like Alex Ferguson. So it makes sense that they would be publishing what is to me the lesser of the two games here, but it's just weird that Hasbro were like, you know, we could do this, but like we're gonna pass here. But let's just start on Operation Extreme, because it opens with, I want you to look this up afterwards, it opens with this incredible 3D animated like cutscene where action man's. If anyone's seen Die Hard 2, there's like a scene in Die Hard 2 where William Sadler, who's from like Bill and Ted and stuff, he's doing like naked Tai Chi in his hotel room. And it's like, you know, oh, look at this weird guy, you know, he's so dedicated to his cause. Like, he's doing this, he's like a really, really weird freak. Action Man's doing Tai Chi clothed, but he's doing Tai Chi or some kind of like, you know, he's just moving around, like doing like all these like poses. Mm. And that's intercut with these cars driving through the night, but it's like really like atmospheric, like it's like lit like a movie. It's all like this weird, like, you know, noir kind of like movement. It's like Michael Mann style music underneath. It's incredible. Mm. But the game is nothing like that.
Okay.
Because the game's like two different kinds of games. There's like a mix of like RC Pro-Am style driving stuff, which I get to. And then Metal Gear Solid style like stealth levels.
Makes sense.
But it's like if you just looked at two screen caps of those two games and were like, I get what these games are about. So like it opens on this level where you have to like drive after you don't even get to drive after Gangrene. You get to drive after Gangrene's personal assistant, which feels
oh, that's excellent. Weird.
Yeah. But you have to like shoot their cars, basically. There's like no time limit, but like the handling on the cars is diabolical. You're like, it's like basically, to tell you how bad it was, I got motion sickness from playing it, because the car, like the way the cars drive, if you like try and do a turn, you basically do like a whole 360 and like spin and like slide into corners. I crashed a lot trying to like chase this one guy who was like, basically if I caught up to him, he would like speed off. So I had to think, okay, if he's gonna go here, I have to drive here and like cut him off. But it was still like, it was just awful. Then level two was like sort of like Metal Gear Solid stealth mission, where like you're basically, you have a gun, it's in third person, it's got a really awkward camera angle, you're infiltrating Gangrene's base. It's got like, it's, see, the way I'm describing it sounds kind of, you know, straightforward, but it's really like, it's just well, the ideas they throw in. The big boss fight is like a giant plant, like from Little Shop of Horrors. And you have to like open that, you have to basically shoot all the, it's got like tendrils, you shoot all the tendrils and then open the skylight in like this big lab to burn it to death. And then you run out and you fight this like giant tank. It's all like, it's just idea after idea after idea. There's this one really like innovative, I don't know if it's innovative per se, but there's one like boss fight where you're fighting this giant mech. And the way you defeat the mech, basically, you had to run to this water valve and turn on the water, and it starts short circuiting the mech as you're fighting it. But it's not like, you know, activate this water valve cutscene of like the water coming in and like taking out the water, just starts right. It's like challenging you to like use your mind to like figure out like what you're doing.
Okay.
I will admit that at some point I had to quit because the save system seems to be a bit broken, but which, I mean, I saved it and I came back in and I was like, there's no save here. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to come back to this. But I did try Destruction X. It's really weird. It opens on this fight where you're fighting a T-Rex that has like all those like cyborg implementations on it, and you have to like throw a boomerang at like weak points on it, basically. And it's really like, you know, cinematic, and you know, for the time, cinematic, like, oh yeah, it's 3D fighting action sequence.
Yeah.
And then the game's like, actually, that's not what the game is, sorry. It's actually just a lot of like races, and it's like the exact same style as that driving mission in the first game. So I tried like five times to win the first race, and I failed every single time because I like the first curve you take, I crashed every single time.
Yeah.
So I just gave up. But I just looked at YouTube, and I looked up like, you know, long play in YouTube, and outside of like, there's this one like very Game and Watch segment where you like have to shine a spotlight on this building to uncover like thieves or henchmen. I was gonna say goons, but I don't like saying the word goon anymore.
We should take back goon though. We need to reclaim it.
Reclaiming goon. the Goon Cave. That's where that's where Dr. X's
it's where he lives. Yeah.
Which, side note, these two games, as far as I know, are based on the or at least not, they're not based. Sorry, these are like the rare.
They're not based.
They're not based. They're really cringe. They're not epic. They're cringe. Dr. X, more like Dr. Flop. He basically, these are like the only two games, as far as I know, that aren't based on an animated Action Man, because the other games are all based on the 1995 TV show.
Right.
As far as I know, which I spoke about earlier on. That TV show, that every episode opens with like a really expensive looking live action sequence shot at Universal Studios.
Yeah.
Literally at the point where they're filming on like the attractions. It's like really obvious.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's like animated, and it cuts back like an outro where it's live action again, and Action Man's like, "Listen up, kids. Sometimes I make mistakes. Don't make mistakes."
I've made mistakes in my time, and here's what I think about them. We all make mistakes, but we always learn from them too. They show us what works and what doesn't. You know that embarrassed feeling you have when you make a mistake? Especially in class, in front of your friends. I get that too. It's just a feeling. It will pass. Don't let it stop you from trying something, and don't be afraid to make a mistake. That's brave. That's taking action in the best way possible. And when it comes to action, I wrote the book.
And like the one I was showing you, which is from the first episode, he does it the whole like, you know, here's a lesson. If you make mistakes, don't worry. You know, it's part of human existence.
Yeah.
But he's doing it in front of the like the screen test home video adventure ride at Universal Studios.
Right.
And they don't even like try to hide like the signage behind them. It's just like clearly at Universal Studios.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Universal were actually involved at all. So I don't know what's going on.
It looked like
there,
they were filming at night. I wonder if they got in with like a skeleton crew. Like quick, film it. Like, why is it filmed there?
Yeah. Yeah, it must have been cheap. I don't know, but like, it's like these two games are just they're not great. As far as I can, as far as I know, beyond that one, like, you know, find all the goons segment, it's all just racing, and then the last level I think is like you fight a giant robot. But like at that point, I was like, I'm not gonna continue this.
Yeah.
But Robot Attack, that's different.
Robot Attack is the sicko shit. Are we gonna do the full deep dive that we were?
We might. I want to specify first of all, I have no idea why, but they spell it ATAK. And the only explanation I can think of is that there must have been a Robot Attack trademarked elsewhere that they were like, we just can't call it.
I think it's just like the spelling is the style at the time. They're still like writing off the like put a Z on things, put an X on things. That was like all the rage in the 90s, because this is like 2004.
They're quite
late to it, but hanging in there.
Robot Attack is weird because it's like an Ouroboros of tie-ins, because it's a GBA game promoting a movie.
Yep.
That was designed as like a 45-minute advert for a new line of toys.
Yep.
So it was like given away free in like newspapers and like, I think probably at one point like cereal and like and actual toys as well. They put a DVD with the toys as far as I know.
Yeah.
The movie itself, I grew up watching, and it's got an insane cast. It's got Steven Berkoff.
Yes.
Off the telly, infamously, allegedly, television show ruiner because he couldn't behave. As Dr. X.
Yeah.
And the Australian doctor from House MD is one of the Action Man psychics. And the plot is one of those, you know, Dr. X wants to take over the world, so he sends No Face, who is like incredibly French. Because there's these new like Dr. X robots, and at one point they walk past like this whole legion of them. And the doctor is called Professor Moran. It's like, what are these for? And then No Face is like,
"Here's a clue, Professor. They're not for washing my smelly socks."
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just like that guy was cooking. He was cooking in the booth.
Cooking. You have skipped ahead again. I do want to again give context for people that weren't in this like specific bubble, because it's important to know. So after they did this big relaunch in the 90s, where they were like, oh, it's all like sci-fi and like insane shit and like the foiling nukes and things like that, they go through for a few years and they have this sort of subplot running in the background where it's like Dr. X is on like Island X or whatever and he's like launching things from it. It's like them fully trying to like capitalize on the whole Thunderbirds resurgence that was happening in the 90s where like Blue Peter was showing you how to make a Tracy Island and stuff like that. And I was like fully on board with that. I will absolutely do some kind of Thunderbirds segment in future because like I was such a Thunderbirds like hyper specific kid. But yeah, it's like they do this for a while and then in around about 2003 they're gonna do a sort of a line of adverts that are like a serial in the so it's like every week or every couple of weeks there's a new set of adverts going out where it's like, oh, now Action Man's doing this bit of foiling the plan and this bit of foiling the plan. And obviously it's like it's designed to be like in a way where you can just hop in at whatever one and you kind of know what's going on. So it's not like much of a story, you know, it's like 5 minutes total. But then the penultimate one is there's like a part where Dr. X gets like he gets like blown off the side of a building and he's like hanging off a crater. It's like GoldenEye style. He's like hanging over like a nuclear reactor or whatever. And he's like about to fall and he's like, oh, help the Action Man. And then it's like, should Action Man save Dr. X's life? And then there was like a number that you could like text like yes or no to and you get charged like £2 or whatever. Because yeah, and that was the style at the time. Like X Factor was big. It was all about like the phone-ins and the competitions and stuff. And incredibly, yes, he should let Dr. X die. It was by like 90% or something. So then, and this is like it's like a weird live action sort of hybrid thing as well. He falls to his death in the reactor, and then the advert all ends. It's like another day saved by Action Man. And then, as planned, they do this big relaunch where they redesign Dr. X. They give him some new sidekicks. They give him this Australian guy with, like, a beanie who's got, like, a metal boomerang and stuff. He's all like, oh, dude, whoa, bodacious. And he has, like, his big sports utility Jeep that, like, goes everywhere. It's bright orange as well. This is the thing about Action Man. Like, they just went for orange, this, like, searing orange as the color.
Because it's still on shelves, I guess, and it just kind of, it was really obvious that you could just say orange Action Man, there you go.
And because it's Hasbro, I think they did it because it sort of contrasts with the searing pink of Barbie around the time as well. It's like, I don't think this really, this is a very, probably more a UK thing, but it's sort of like Action Man and Barbie would be next to each other on the shelves. It's sort of like, this is the boys' one, this is the girls' one. I don't know if they did tried anything even similar in America. Like, I don't know if G.I. Joe was really still prominent in, like, the 2000s. But, like, that was, that felt like the marketing. Even as, like, a seven-year-old, I was like, I see through what you're doing. And I buy it. But yeah, and they give him a Native American psychic as well, who is absolutely voiced by a white
he
guy.
He was.
I think he's called Red Wolf.
He is. And he's played by Eric Myers, who is in films like A Hologram for the King and Snatch. So he's also got... he also narrated an episode of South Park, apparently.
Oh, strange.
I should never have gone ziplining. Apparently, he narrates that.
Oh right, but, okay.
Yeah, but it, yeah, it's it like they this whole big push of like here's this new cast of characters. Obviously, like the whole cast of characters is because they could sell toys.
Of course,
and
yeah.
Toys I bought. I bought all of them. I bought I think it's Flint, the Australian guy played by HouseMD's Australian doctor.
I can't believe he's actually Australian. That does not sound like a real accent.
I know. To be fair, it sounds like he's maybe been told, like, you know, can you please
play it up? Yeah.
I bought Red Wolf. I bought the Action Man magazine, and there was a thing in the back was like how to make your own like Red Wolf's cabin for like, you know, all your Action Men to hang out. And I tried making another shoebox and I failed miserably and I was like, I'm never doing this again.
Oh my god.
I've been embarrassed. I got the No Face figure No Face voiced by a man. I know we were joking about how like he's very French, but the actor's name is Pierre Guy Mabouche. Which is Yeah, he also played Raven in the French version of Metal Gear Solid.
Wow.
And of course, there's Action Man, who's played by Oliver Milburn, who I have no idea who that is, but he...
Honestly, he sounds exactly like how you'd expect Action Man to sound. And he's like always like espousing the like, he's like, it's all about trust, friendship, and working together. And he's got like a perfect like commercial voice as well. I think that's like exactly why they like cast him. But yeah, they do. So they did this tie-in movie that's, yeah, as you were sort of saying, has this whole element of subterfuge, and they're all like, oh, Dr. X is back and he's better than ever. The main thing is that they try all the weird gimmicks of Dr. X in particular. I think at one point he had like an interchange. The cyborg part was like, oh, you can have interchangeable arms. There is one part in the movie where he like walks up to Action Man and he's all like, oh, I can fry you or I can shock you. And he's like showing off all the different attachments. And it's, again, I love how much of just like an unapologetic advert it is. It's fantastic. It's like one of those things where you're like, this is dubiously legal, but like I ate it up as a kid. I loved it.
It's got such a like specific energy that like it's impossible not to watch it and be like, you know, this is silly. And like the actors to their credit, like Pierre Mabouche is clearly just being like, you know, this is a toy. I'm gonna just have fun with like my performances as No Face.
Enough! Your fun is over.
Who are you?
Allow me to introduce myself. They call me No Face. Or sometimes, huh? Action Man. What's wrong, pretty boy? Are you shocked by what you see?
But they've made a game to promote this whole thing, the toy line and the movie. And it was developed by a French company who I'd never heard of before this. And it also was incredibly hard to find information because they share their name with a game that is more popular than they are.
Right.
It was developed by a company called Magic Pockets SAS. Not to be confused with the Bitmap Brothers game, Magic Pocket. So whenever I was trying to look it up, I was like, this is just, this isn't what I'm looking for. To give you an idea of what they were developing before and after this. This is sandwiched between Ultimate Beach Soccer for the GBA.
Okay.
And Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance, also for the GBA.
Oh my god.
Magic Pockets have also worked on Cartoon Network Battle Crashers.
Is that the Smash Brothers?
That is a Smash
Brothers. Oh no, that's something else.
It's, no, it is. I think that, or
Punch
it's
Time Explosion is the Smash Brothers clone. It's, I don't know what Battle Crashers
is. It's some variation of that. They are behind a lot of the Imagine games, like Imagine Teacher and Imagine Teacher School Tour, whatever it's called. And the iOS and DS versions of Mini Ninjas as well.
Oh, Mini Ninjas.
Mini Ninjas, they're very
is
mini.
Is that from IO?
That's from IO, yeah.
Version?
Yeah.
Incredible.
What a company. But their most recent game was, and I quote, Zag Heroes Miraculous Rise of the Sphinx from 2022, which is based on this French TV show called, I think, Miraculous Tales of Ladybug and Cat Noir.
Yes. I've got friends that are quite into that.
I've heard it is quite popular online these days. However, this is Robot Attack, not Robot Cat Attack. So, you know, it's a 2D platformer. You'd be surprised to learn a GBA game's a 2D platformer. But it has like two levels involving Flint and Red Wolf, where it like flips like, you know, like a Mario Kart Super Circuit style like perspective. The Flint one, you're like on Flint's longboard and you're like skateboarding through this like Death Valley kind of area. There are all these boulders, even missile, like infinite missiles. You have to like shoot all the boulders out of the way to shoot all these Dr. X robots. Dr. X has two kinds of robots, actually he's like three or four. But they're all, the only difference like is like they're different colors, and the toy had like a button in the middle where if you pressed the faceplate and like the arm plates popped off.
Yeah, it's like there's like a green panel in the movie. Yeah. They really play it up. They're like, they've got a hidden weak spot. And it's like the big fucking green panel in their chest. And they punch it, and then, yeah, like you say, like, the toy basically falls apart. Mm. It rules. Like, the thing is, I can't get too cynical about it, because I do hear about the, like, the toy engineers and the designers and stuff, and they're like, yeah, we just wanted kids to have fun, and, like, Hasbro just, like, threw all this money at us, and we're like, yeah, just, like, make something fun for kids. Like, that's something I can get behind as part of it, even though it is ultimately consumerism. It's like, you know what, like, some creatives did have a great time, so...
Mm. They cooked. They did cook.
They did cook.
And the other kind of vehicle section is that Red Wolf has like a jet ski at one point. They gave Red Wolf a jet ski, and there's also like a couple of weird levels. There's like a 2D, because it goes back to 2D platform, but you're on like Action Man's motorbike, but the motorbike is like a giant. It's for some reason it's like huge compared to like the actual Action Man sprite.
Brilliant.
And you're doing 2D platforming on a motorbike, and it's really awkward. And there's also like for some reason it's timed. It's like a really timed, because in the movie Professor Moran has to like experiment on a gorilla, and they like let the gorilla go free, and it helps him out. In the game, you play as a gorilla for one level, and the gorilla, like, it's like a timed level where like you're like platforming as a gorilla, and like you're like fighting these guys. But it's just like a 2D platformer. It's got really, really good. The sprite animation is so fluid. It looks so good when you like destroy a robot. Like the way that they go down looks incredible. The music in all three games is it's fine. Mm. It's kind of like, it's the whole thing of like, you know, you compose like maybe like two or three riffs for like a licensed game. Like they like cycle through them on a loop. But it's fine. Both Robot Attack, the movie. I don't remember that. It ends with the thing said, like, go to actionman.com for, like, the continuing adventures of Action Man.
Sure does.
And the game's, like, every single time you beat a level, the game's, like, go to actionman.com for, like, you know, exclusives.
Oh, my God. Brilliant.
And I tried. I went on the Wayback Machine, and that website's so reliant on Flash, like, even with, like, you know, going back to it, like, there's no way you can actually interact with any of that stuff. So it's gone. Whatever it was, it's gone. Something that also tickled me is that Robot Attack, which is the most games that's built on passwords, it just lets you activate the debug mode. So I turned it on to see like what would happen, and like obviously like you're invincible, whatever.
Yeah.
But if you like land in like a pit, because all these pits, or like just go anywhere, like if you fell off the map, you die. The game just stops, and you have to like restart the level because the game is like, you know, you've died, but like we can't like kill you because you have you have debug mode on, so it just ends. So you have to like restart all the levels. It's really annoying. The thing is though, it's like the idea that like they went through so much effort. I hate being like, you know, nostalgic for an era of capitalism where like, you know, it was probably as evil. Well, probably it was as evil as it is now, but like it was so insidious. But like it's like finding beauty in like a McDonald's advert, but like
the one that Edgar Wright directed.
Yeah, it's like I should not be finding myself taken in by like a level where Action Man is fighting a dinosaur, because it's trying to sell me out on like the idea of like an action figure, but Action Man and the dinosaur. But at the same time, it's such like a visceral reaction. It's like, oh my god, I'm fighting the dinosaur, the boomerang.
Yeah,
and like I'm taking it on. And then, you know, I'm doing all these missions. I'm like fighting like, you know, all these guys. I'm doing all this cool stuff. But like the end goal is, you know, we want you to spend like 50 quid on like all these Action Man figures. Mm. And I did. I bought so many of them. And I buried one in my garden for like 2 years.
What?
At one point. And I was playing with them, like whatever the game I was playing, like whatever, like, you know, scenario. It involved Action Man being buried, and I forgot where he was buried. So it was just in the garden for like 2 years, and then my mom found him. And just like, okay.
Let's go in the garden. You'll find something waiting right there where you left it, lying upside down. When you finally find it, you'll see how it's faded. The underside is lighter when you turn it around. Stays right where you left it. Everything stays, but it still changes ever so slightly, daily and nightly, in little.
I just want to end things pretty quickly on a quiz. It's rapid fire. Are these Action Man villains or are they not?
Okay.
So Gerard the Visage.
No, that's not.
That is No Face's real name.
Damn it, I felt like it was.
Gerard the Face. It's Gerard the
Face.
Okay,
yeah.
Scorpion.
That sounds real.
That is, from where I sourced, and that's a Spider-Man villain.
Aww.
It's also obviously the Mortal Kombat character. Butterball.
Butterball's not real.
That's a Cenobite from Hellraiser. It's the guy with the small sunglasses. yeah. Tempest.
Tempest sounds real. I think you mentioned Tempest earlier.
I did. He's the guy with the lightning rod, who's his whole design is, he's got like big hair. He's got like blue and yellow like face paint. He's got like a big open chest with like lightning bolts down his... in his front. He looks cool.
Yeah.
Plague Locust.
No, that sounds like a Hellboy thing.
Plague Locust is exclusive to the PC game Raid on Island X.
Oh my god.
He's a guy who like, he's like, he flies around. He has like a gas mask on.
Mm.
He's evil. Toxica. That's toxic with an A.
Oh, these are really throwing me. I'm following my gut. I'm saying yeah.
She's Gangrene's PA from the opening mission of Operation Extreme.
Okay.
And finally, Trevor Tuet. And that's T-U-E-T-E.
T-U-E-T-E.
E-T-E. Trevor Tuet. That's an anagram of Everett True.
Oh. Damn.
Who was in many ways the original Action Man, because if you got in his way, he'd knock you out and keep going, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, that's Action Man. From the Oliver Twins to a French company to some great adverts and some great capitalism for all to enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, it'd be remiss of me not to mention the Action Man spinoff, Alpha Teens on Machines, ATOM. Which tried and failed to capitalize.
Yeah, I had no idea that was actually related.
It really, really, really hurt me as a child, because I had a subscription to, you know, Action Man magazine.
Yeah.
And I was like on top of the world, you know, getting all these issues in. They were great. I loved reading them. And then one day it's not Action Man magazine, it's ATOM magazine. And that's how I learned that they cancelled Action Man and replaced him with these teenagers. I lost
Action
interest.
Man replaced him with woke canceled, millennials.
They cancelled Action Man for woke, because his eyes moved when you put your thumb in his back, and he was known to consort with Dr. X.
He's a known communist.
So ATOM, we're not interested. But
no, I have also put in the GBA box art for Robot Attack, because I think it's incredible. I will probably put it somewhere in the description, because it's this amazing, like, matte painting.
It looks like, you know, when fairgrounds paint, like, off-model characters,
yes,
on the right.
And they're, like, airbrushed like... to hell.
Yeah, it looks like them.
It's like Dr. X on the left doing this big sicko's, like, yell, and there's a nuke in the middle of them, and then there's Action Man on the right looking incredibly sweaty, like, oh, I gotta stop it. Holding like a non-distinct laser gun.
And
fantastic.
It's a screenshot from the movie in the bottom left corner of all the yeah. robots.
That is the thing, the art looks nothing like the movie. It's great. It's like it's published by Atari. It's got the kind of Atari 2600 like effect, this crazy illustration that looks nothing like the game.
Mm-hmm.
I was gonna say as well, I looked up on eBay just because I was curious, and the GBA cart just by itself is like £20. So I imagine this didn't sell particularly well. Either that, or people are like super attached to it and they've really held on to it. But you know, most GBA kids games you can get pretty cheap pretty easily, as I will illuminate in my next segment. So yeah, as we were saying, it's like we ended up on a strange. I don't know if it's just because our brains just got on like the same wavelength, but we ended up in a strange sort of parallel running British multimedia attempt at like action franchises for kids. Mm-hmm. Which it seems like such a specific niche, but like there are apparently more than one of them. So I brought to David's attention somewhat, because I don't think you'd heard of this before. I don't know if this really made it to Ireland, because I mean, you guys had like you guys have the BBC, right?
We did, yeah, we did, but like Ace Lightning just kind of passing play, I think.
Yeah. So Ace Lightning is the show. So I'm gonna give the primer, because there'll be a subset of the audience who are like, oh man, yeah, no, I remember that, and then there'll be a subset who are like, what are you talking about? So this is a sort of mixed genre, mixed media rather, like CGI live action show. It's a British Canadian production between the BBC and this company called Alliance Atlantis. I couldn't find much else that they like really worked on. This was like one of their big projects together, though. It aired from September 2002 to like May 2005. Apparently, it was across two seasons. Apparently, the second season aired in like America in like 2004, and it got like delayed over here for whatever reason. It got adapted to like a bunch of different languages, a bunch of different territories, but the main reason I zoomed in on it was something that I remembered like vaguely, but like I also just like haven't actually watched in about 20 years. And the premise is like a game comes to life and runs amok in the real world, and then there's also like teen drama going on at the same time. And the two intersect. I brought it up because I found it fascinating that it was part of this attempt by the BBC to get a multimedia wing going. Like, they literally founded a company called BBC Multimedia, and they started like making games off a bunch of their properties. And a lot of it was like the CBeeB stuff, like your Tweenies, your Bob the Builder and stuff like that. A lot of very late era PlayStation games.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a few Game Boy Color games as well, which is like, that's like the go-to kids platform. I don't know what it is about it. I don't know if it's like just the general styling of the logo, or if it was because it like launched quite cheap, or I don't know. But you know, Game Boy Color was the sort of haven for that sort of thing, so the BBC were there with all their kids stuff. But Ace Lightning was this sort of attempt at a cross-media platform. So it starts out with this show, which has its first season of 26 episodes, and then a second that's like way more serialized and goes to 13 episodes. I found out that sort of in the first season, it actually kicked up like a weird amount of controversy, because this is sort of the era where like the Parents Television Council are sort of rising to prominence in the States. Like, they're kicking up a fuss about Family Guy and, like, South Park every week, and they're like, oh, ban this filth. It's sort of like a weird resurgence of the Mary White House conservatism, mm-hmm. Which, if you don't know, it's quite a specific thing to the UK. And, like, it was, like, the 70s and the 80s, right?
Yeah.
There was this sort of busybody Mary White House who'd, like, write in to the BBC and TV shows and be like, this has no merit, and this is like too violent, this is too sexual, like ban it.
This is too cringe, there's no riz going on here.
Yeah, and people go back and forth, the popular consensus goes back and forth over whether she was like relentlessly conservative and obviously all the sort of baggage that comes with that, or if she was like a girl boss and a hero and a like a modern day suffragette, or like if she was misunderstood and like there's been all this smear put on her by like the networks and stuff like that. I still, every time I hear about her, I'm just like, I don't know, man. Like, mm-hmm. She sounds like she was about as unhinged as you'd expect someone that's regularly writing into TV shows and asking them to like pull stuff off the air. But also like some of the stuff she says does have like some kind of merit. I'm pretty sure she clashed swords with Doctor Who at a few points.
Oh, yeah, she was all over the production office of Doctor Who in terms of the back and forth complaints, but I think it was mostly Tom Baker that she had objections to. Not Tom Baker the person, but like Tom Baker's era.
Yes.
She didn't really care for it.
Yeah, because it got too violent. And yeah, the main thing that was sort of the source of the spat that I could find with Ace Lightning was that it didn't have like educational merit and it was too violent, which are very strange things to come down on this like quite standard action show for. I'm not even an action show, it's just like a kid's like drama. But yeah, I feel like I'm getting ahead of myself and I'm going a bit all over the place. So yeah, I sat David down with the first episode of the show. And I'm quite interested to hear what some of your thoughts are. So as I said, just again to give a bit of a prelude, it's a live action show with CG elements, and it's about this English kid who goes across to America and he's about to start his first day at school, and then a bolt of lightning strikes his satellite dish, and then his controller starts going crazy, and then that causes all the baddies in his favorite game, Ace Lightning, to like spring to life. And then that's where the story starts.
Mm-hmm. There's a weird bit of it as well where like he accesses a level that you're not meant to access.
Yes!
To access.
He's like, level 7, like... I've never heard of level 7.
Yeah, and then it's like, no one's forgot the level 7. And it's like, well, then why is it in the game? The other thing as well is that he's playing with like two joysticks.
Yep.
Which is...
giant like Sidewinder joysticks, like flight simulator joysticks with like the little switches on and everything. And like, that's like probably... I remember that like stuck in my mind, like, because again, this is from 2002. I watched this about 20 years ago. That did stick in my mind, the iconography of the... Again, why does the lightning hitting the satellite dish make the game come to life? I know that's like fucking, oh, I really hope someone got fired for that blunder, like logic, but it's like, I love that sort of thinking. I did find out later on that actually they originally wanted it to be a comic book that comes to life. Which is why it's so like superhero heavy. Mm-hmm. And it's also why he's like carrying around like a big oversized instruction book, which is basically a comic, and he's like referring to it as like the sacred text. He's like, this is how the characters are supposed to act. This is what I should be expecting. But I do feel like you get that sort of feeling that they wanted it to be the comic book thing, and then like someone was like, well, no, kids don't read comics, they play games. And then there's a bit of like resentment about that because their understanding of games is very strange.
Mm-hmm. So the overwhelming thought I had when I started watching it was that because it's got like the archetypal stuff of like, you know, fish out of water, comes into the school, he makes friends with the weird kid. But the way they always film this kid is like, he's almost always like filmed like, and this is obviously hyperbole, but like it feels like he's always filmed like cake all over his face. It's one of those kind of characters where like his whole deal is that like he's sad and he's like, you know, he's a weirdo, but he also drinks full Pepsi at lunch and he's a big size of cake.
He comes over with like a quintuple decker like ham sandwich and like an actual bowl of crisps. It's kind of, you feel kind of bad because the character, the act is kind of heavy set, so they're like clearly like, this is the fat kid, isn't it funny how he eats, and like his name's Chuck, but all the characters call him Up Chuck because he like pukes all the time. Yeah, it's like
it's not
kind of fucked, but it's like but there is definitely something to enjoy about like one of the first scenes where they're sitting in the canteen, and as you pointed out, like he just has more and more cake on his face in every shot, and there's like weird continuity errors where it's like some shots he's got cake like all over his face, and then some shots he's got like nothing.
There's also an evil skeleton who's trying to take over
Lord Fear. The theming of the fictional Ace Lightning game is very strangely defined. I found out through some research that they had this idea that it was going to be like, I guess when it was still the comic idea, it was going to be like a lords and ladies kind of thing, which is why it's like you've got Lord Fear, who's like the skeleton guy. The character designer was saying he's quite influenced by Skeletor, constantly making like knuckle cracking sounds as he's like moving about, which is really distracting. And then you've got like Lady Illusion, she sort of becomes the love interest of Ace later in the show. They have like a weird love triangle, and it's going back and forth between like Lord Fear and Ace Lightning, and then by the finale of the show she actually does like a heroic sacrifice. Then they have like a character they just called Pig Face, which is just a big boar thing that just goes around. And again, the gag with him for some reason is just he's all like, oh, me eat, me hungry, me eat garbage, oh. They have a thing, they don't show it so much in the first episode, but they have a thing where all the characters, like, all the CG characters, like, disguise themselves as things during the day. And Pigface disguises himself as, like, a bin, which is, like, great. There's another character called Dirty Rat, which is just a sort of weird giant rat with bat wings and a clown nose that flies around. And he's very, he sounds exactly as you'd expect. He's like, oh, old Phil, I'm going to help you. And then they have just Anvil, who's like this rhino with a giant anvil for a hand. And he goes around smashing stuff. But they have this sort of general, like, carnival theme for the villains. But then, like, Ace Lightning is just, like, the most generic, like, superhero. Like, he just has, like, a brown bomber jacket, and he's blonde. He sounds kind of like Buzz Lightyear. And he just, he goes around with this group called the Lightning Knights, and they just, they fire lightning at stuff. I guess it's supposed to be, like, intentionally, like, archetypical, because then they can kind of, like, play with that, but there is, like, just sort of a point where it's like, well, these characters are incredibly flat, so there isn't much to, like, grip onto there, I don't think. But yeah, they have this general, like, carnival theme, and as a result of that, all the villains, like, while Mark's having, like, his first day at school, and they're playing this really angsty montage where he's like, having trouble fitting in, and meanwhile, Ace Lightning's, like, back at his house, and he's, like, figuring out the real world. He's, like, he's flushing a toilet, and he's getting a bit scared by it, and then he there's an incredible shot where he goes up to a computer monitor, and he puts his hand on it wistfully, and he's just, like, he turns his head to the side, and it's, like, wow, the drama. He's just like, put me back in the game, please. But yeah, they have this, like, montage where all that's happening. And meanwhile, the villains are, like, trying to find a new base of operations. And they find this closed carnival that, you know, has been, like, desolate for years. And they approach, like, the carny guy. And he's all like, oh, hey, what do you kids want? Like, I'm not hiring at the moment. And then they're all just like, immediately threatening him, and he's like freaking out because, like, these are, he essentially views them as, like, it's like his Roger Rabbit moment. He's just like, these fucking cartoons have come to haunt me, and, like, I'm their slave at this point. So they end up, like, setting up this carnival as their new base of operations, the Carnival of Doom. And then I watched a couple more episodes because the first episode is, like, a little slow. It's a little, like, hokey as well. Like, most of it is about, like, the drama of Mark adjusting to his first day at school, which is, it's like this sort of, like, middle school, high school drama, I feel like, was really in vogue at the time. You had stuff like Lizzie McGuire and, like, Even Stevens and stuff playing it around the same time. The twist of, like, the video game has come to life and it's making me live this double life is, like, it does give it a bit of sauce, I guess. I mean, especially considering the usual trope would be, like, people getting sucked into the game rather than the game coming to real life.
Mm-hmm.
And doing this sort of CG stuff for the time, I feel like is quite ambitious. But yeah, it's a very strange setup for episodes. In the second episode, the carnival, like, actually reopens and they all go to it. And they have this sort of subplot where there's, like, the next door neighbor girl is, like, kind of interested in Mark, but, like, Mark has, like, absolutely no riz and is just, like, constantly, like, fucking things up. I think the thing I really zoomed in on is that, like, the main character Mark, like, just kind of sucks. He sucks so much. The main thing that I get at is that, like, that they definitely could have edited is he's constantly closing scenes being like, oh, if only superheroes are real, huh? Or he'll be like,
Peter, you won't believe this, but I rescued this girl named Samantha. Except she doesn't know it. And now she thinks I'm a big freak. This isn't a game anymore, mate. The way it's going, I don't know if I'm going to make any friends in America. Well, at least not any human friends.
like, Jesus, dude, just walk off. Like, you don't have to have a quip, like, every time a scene closes. I was also going to say it has this weird problem that is kind of their own creation, where even though it's a British-Canadian show, it's set in America, like, just sort of wherever, California. And the result is that they've got a bunch of Canadian actors that are forced to put on American accents, which definitely gives me the same vibes as, like, K-9, where they've forced the Australian kids to put on British accents and set it in London for, like, not good reason. I'm guessing it's, like, just a franchising thing. They're like, well, if we set it in the States, it'll, you know, then we can ship it across to the States. But then the problem is that the main character and his family are British. And they also have this framing device at the start of all the episodes where he's, like, video calling his friend back in England. who has this incredible web page. It's like flaming text at the top, and it says like, oh, what does it say? It says his name. It's like Ryan time or whatever. And then it's got all these links on the side where it's like, here's my web page. Here's my pals page. Here's my Juarez. I don't know why a like 13-year-old has a page with Juarez on it. But
it looks like the way all the text is laid out looks like a SNES box art, because it has like the way like the flag and the text looks like a border, and I have like, the image in the middle. It looks really weird.
Yeah, I'm gonna give a bit of a description. It's flaming text at the top that says PeteTime.com. And then there's a little video window where it's like, it says like video uplink, Absolution T-Book 500. And then it's got like a little webcam view. Again, very iCarly. It's like this sort of thing is happening in shows all the time. They'd be like, what if Skype was real? Wouldn't that be fucked up and cool? I guess MSN had some video messaging features, but I don't know. It would not have been this good quality. It would have been absolutely dreadful. On the side, you've got, there's all his links. You've got home, pals, photos, games, Juarez, news, links. There's a little moving GIF that's so low resolution, I can't tell what it says. It's a giant GIF of the British flag. And then there's a little, like, bio on the right that says, welcome to Pete Time UK. Hi, my name is Peter, and I'm a 13-year-old student in London, England. I enjoy surfing the internet, hacking, and chatting with my mates, especially my best friend, Mark Hollander, who moved this year to the United States. Click the pals link for more. Just like, wow, incredible. Child just posting all this online. Like, what a time. I will say, for a slight sidebar, it did remind me of, like, the boom of, like, I don't know if you remember Pixo. It was this sort of web page. It was, like, sort of Facebook had kind of started, but it was still like in college campuses, and like Bebo was going about, but there was this sort of social networking / website builder thing called Pixo, where you could make your own like web page, and they would look exactly like this. It would be like you could get like a little plugin. It was essentially like Wix, where you could get like little plugins and like text features and stuff like that, and then like put them on your page. You could embed Flash games. I remember that. I remember putting the like Super Mario Brothers Flash game that was like this weird amalgam of like the Mario All-Stars sprites, but like just this completely like a completely original level design that was not good. I think the Sonic Flash game was on there as well. It was like, but yeah, this just reminded me of that specific thing, because like I remember making the exact same thing. Where I literally just had a thing where it was like, you can click through and you can see all these photos of my friends and stuff from our like school trip. And it's like, in hindsight, I'm like, oh my God, the safeguarding, like that's horrific that I just put that all up like publicly. I'm like, this is my best friend. Here's his full name. Oh man. But like truly like a slightly more innocent time. I think the plus of it was that it's sort of like if you just start a Twitter account and you don't tell anyone about it, and you're just sort of, if you were just sort of posting yourself, you're not following anyone, you're not interacting with anyone. It's not like anyone would like find that. In the same way, like all these kids and teens and stuff were just making their own websites and like maybe sharing them with their friends, but like nothing really went like viral. The main thing that I remember about Pixo as well was that bizarrely, when the Bratz movie came out in 2007, the like live action Bratz movie, they made a website with Pixo, and it was like, go to bratz.pixo.com. And even as a 10-year-old, I was like, that seems a bit cheap that they use like, it's, you know, it's essentially like, again, as I said, it's like Wix. It's like if a new movie came out and they were like, you know, go to I don't know, like the Battleship movie came out and it was like, go to battleship.wix.com. It's like, what? Why that? I don't know when Pixo like went down. It was sometime in like the early 2010s, like when social media was actually becoming relevant. I do wish I had that on like Internet Archive or something, because I would love to see what my stupid site looked like. I just remember being so excited to just like add all these like widgets and stuff to the pages. It could be like, you know, you'd be like, oh, here's a clock and here's a slideshow of some like nature scenes. You can embed YouTube videos and stuff. So like, I don't know. I just remember, like, especially as a kid, it was like the dream was always like, I'm going to make my own website and it's going to have all this like flash stuff on it. It's gonna have like animated smileys you can download and mouse cursors.
It's gonna be like Homer's website in The Simpsons.
Exactly like Homer's website. I remember seeing Homer's website in that episode and being like, God, that's the dream. All the yelling faces and the flying toasters and stuff, just like GIFs.
Dancing Jesus.
Like the longer it takes to load, like the better the page is, IMO.
Hypnospace is really, really cool. All the kids are talking about it at school. Cool skateboard tricks, amazing tips, and eating Bappo's chips. We all love Hypnospace so much, it rocks, it is the best. Hypnospace.
But yeah, like, part of why I brought this up was just because of the, like, bizarre multimedia attempt, and also this like that it very specifically relates to the games, but also because they sort of threaded the needle and they came back around and did make games based off the show, which are about as bad as you'd expect. The GBA game I slotted in and immediately got blasted with, because it came out of the Tyrtex logo, who was somebody I mistook for Titus, who were a notorious like French studio. They did like Superman 64 and like a bunch of other like really strange games. But no, Tyrtex were a UK company who did, again, lots of licensed stuff, lots of kids games. This was apparently one of their last like big games, and then they pivoted into like just like electrical engineering. They just like completely change tack out of the games industry. I did find a page from like one of their like trade partners or something where they're really they're gassing up their involvement in games, and they go on this whole spiel in the middle where they're like, much like vinyl records, retro games are coming back into fashion, and quite a few gamers are big fans of the Bug's Life game on Game Boy Color that they made. And I'm like, they're not, what are you about? Coming from, I don't know when it was written, it was from like sometime in the early 2010s, I'd guess, but like I was just like, what the hell are they on about? I boot it up, and immediately the title screen is like the spinning version of the Ace Lightning logo, and they're playing the theme song from the show, which I have in my notes is kind of like the Red Hot Chili Peppers on opioids. Like, it's a very sleepy version of that kind of like butt rock that was so prevalent at the time. But I booted up, it's the spinning Ace Lightning logo, and it's just a direct rip of the TV theme, but like compressed. So I don't know how they didn't even get like the actual theme from the show, but it's like, it's got all the like lightning effects and stuff that's like absolutely ruining the song. So that's fantastic. I boot through to it, and then you're immediately placed into this carnival overworld, and you're running around with these pre-rendered sprites, and you're going up to these doors, and then they're all just slamming on you, and the screen shakes, and it's like, oh, okay, that's quite jarring. I guess it's like sort of telling me like, oh no, you have to unlock these areas. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's literally, I walk up to like four different doors and they all slam on me, and I'm like, could you just like put me by the one I was supposed to go in, please? Like, this is I'm just feeling like Like, you know, if you put someone in the middle of a theme park, but then you're like, and you have all these open doors and all these attractions, but then you're like, no, you can't go there yet. No, you can't go there yet. It's like immediately not good vibes from the start. But I eventually find my way to the right place. I also thought like the controls were broken at first because you have to stay on the path as you're walking around the theme park. It's like a very small gravel path. And if you like try to move outside of it, like Ace just like freezes in place. So I was like kind of finagling, trying to figure out like the actual hitbox for it so that I wasn't like freezing in place constantly. But I finally find my way to the first area and it is absolutely inscrutable. Like I go down this big slide. The sprites are gigantic, by the way. It's like, it feels super zoomed in, but I'm running around collecting little widgets. And I don't really have any idea what the objective is. It's like sometimes I pick up a power up that lets me fly for like 2 seconds and then I just get like shot back down to earth. I spend a lot of time flying around in circles and I don't really have any idea of what I'm doing. And I'm just going back and forth. I'm trying to figure out like any sort of way forward. And I'm kind of like, okay, maybe I look at the manual. Is there anything in there that's going to help? Basically nothing. It's one of those manuals where you spend about half of it being like, this is how you insert the game cartridge into the console and this is how you turn the console on and here's where the A button is and here's where the B button is, and it like tells you what the controls are, but it doesn't really tell you like the objectives of the levels or anything. It's just like, here's a it does have a bit where it's like, here's all the worlds you'll go to, and it has a very small black and white screenshots where it's like, this is the ghost train, this is the house of mirrors, this is the fun house. And I swear to God, some of them just look like the same level because it's just such a random screenshot with no other context. I did actually buy a boxed copy because I was able to find one on eBay for £5 including shipping. And like, as soon as I got it, I immediately was like, oh man, because it's in pristine condition for a box from like 20 years ago. So this absolutely sat in a warehouse for like years and has finally found a home. Yeah, I'm looking at the back of the box now. It's one of those games where it will just list all the worlds in the game, but you don't really have any sort of context for what that actually means. It just says Carnival Worlds, Adventure, Horror, Illusion, and Fun. Levels within the worlds include Funhouse, Log Ride, Waxworks, and Hall of Mirrors. It's like, I don't understand how it's supposed to get me to buy the game. Like hearing the concept that there is a House of Mirrors in the game. But yeah, I'm flying around. I'm getting hit constantly. I don't really fully know what I'm doing. So I'm like, okay, well, this one's a bit of a bust. So I'm going to try the PS2 version that I've seen going around. And this is a very strange game. This is something where it kind of ties back into the Wonka experience we were talking about, where they have the same idea as the GBA one, where they're like, okay, so it's about the carnival. So the carnival is the framing device. It has the same thing where there's all these doors, but they have the big locks on them. And it's like, you need 5 amulet pieces or whatever. You need 10 amulet pieces, which, you know, Mario 64 did that. Yeah. Like, it's fair enough. The thing is, it's a lot more linear than it implies, because it's sort of just like, well, no, that's actually the maximum amount of amulets you get in each like world. So like, it might as well just be a level select or a world map or whatever. It might as well just be a linear path. But I don't know. I guess they wanted to give the illusion that you're exploring the carnival. So I go to the first section, which is the Googler's lair or whatever. So the Googler is a character that gets introduced about midway through the first season. He's a sort of clown that has 2 sock puppets, and he's got this really weird, just perfectly round head with these big googly eyes. I was going to mention that it's interesting that they went for the sort of circus theme, because it gives me slight, I think it's entirely coincidental, but it does give me like slight Nights into Dreams sort of vibes from like how everything's got that sort of carnival texture on, and it's all early CG, so it all looks like a bit creepy by default. But you go to the Googler's lair, you immediately get like a comic book style cutscene, which is incredibly compressed, which is a bad sign. I did also look at the back of the box of the PS2 version and saw it's one of those PS2 games that came on a CD rather than a DVD-ROM. So that immediately sets like expectations as well. You're like, ah, it's one of those games. The general aesthetic of the game is like barely above an N64 game. It's crazy. And that goes with all the sort of like distance fog as well. It's a very smoggy game. It's very like... It's colourful smog, at least. It's green and it's purple, but it creates this sort of, like, hazy atmosphere. It feels like you're taking, like, poison from gas or something. So, yeah, I go to the Googler's lair, and then, again, I'm given a bunch of locks on doors, and it's essentially like, okay, just go to the first level. And the first level is, like, this incredibly drab circus arena where you're just walking from area to area. The mooks you're fighting are very weird because they're just essentially like regular carnies. There's like acrobats that are walking around on their heads, or on their hands rather, but like they just look like regular guys. So it feels weird when you're like blasting them with lightning and they fall over and they die and then they like fade into nothing. There's a lot of animals as well. There's a lot of like, there's like elephants and lions and there's like a bear and a sort of circus outfit and stuff. It feels weird considering how out there the designs of like the villains and stuff are in the series, where it's like the skeleton and the blue lady with like a spider on her head and like the giant pig and stuff, and then the actual mooks in this are just like just clowns. Just clowns and like animals and stuff. There's a very stereotypical like strong man in like the leopard print leotard who just sort of wobbles around. Again, it feels so much like an N64 game. It's bonkers. You're running around collecting Doom tokens, and every few times you collect one, Ace interjects to be like, "I gotta get those Doom dimes," which is like great, cool. Yeah, it feels like a bad dream. It's like one of the weirdest first levels I think I've played in quite a while. You're just walking between these big gaps of nothing, and then you get to like a little area where you fight a few enemies and you collect a few coins, and then you move on to the next one, and it goes on. It kind of reminded me of Yooka-Laylee. Like, I don't know if you remember when that game came out, one of the big criticisms was that it felt like the levels had been scaled too big, and that there was very little to do or collect in them. It was all just spaced quite far apart. And then, like I said, it also did just feel like that Wonka thing, because there's all these props and stuff everywhere with like spirals and circus patterns and things on them, but they're very sparse, they're very sparsely placed, and they're just in this weird tent environment that does just feel like the warehouse. Yeah, I just thought it was funny that like those two things seem to have happened at the same time as I was playing this game. It's also just got like, as you were saying with the Action Man game, it has that thing where there's like maybe two or three tracks for the entire game, but like it's just a very short loop. So it's just going like do-do-ch-do-do-do-ch-do-do-do-do. I just had to stick a podcast on because I felt like I was going crazy otherwise. You get through that level, then you're doing like a sort of boardwalk, which is like, you know, it's fine. It's a bit better paced at least. And then the last level of that section is you go inside like a giant cannon, and you slide down it and start firing down the down the cannon, and you are moving so slowly. I don't know why. It's a European only game, so it runs at 50 hertz. It is 50 FPS at least, which you'd expect for like how it looks and how sparse it is, but it does just feel like slower than it needs to be. And this is when I find the positive of the super PS2 that I have, that I run through my computer and allows me to uncap the frame rate. So you could tell where this is going. I take it out of full screen mode, because if you uncap the frame rate and have it in full screen, it goes to 60 FPS, which makes it a little bit faster. But I'm genuinely getting so bored of this level that I'm like, oh, I'm just going to quit, like, whatever. Like, I'm going to call a bit of a mulligan on this. I'm just going to be like, yeah, bad game, whatever, move on. I go into windowed mode. It immediately shoots up to 200 frames per second. And I am able to blast through this section, and it actually kind of rules, because I could just hold the button and just spam fire the attack as I'm going down this tube, blasting all this stuff out of the way, and I'm like, oh, this kind of fucking rules. Then I get to the end of it, the cutscene starts playing, and it's playing, like, way too fast. Like, all the characters are, like, talking over each other. I'm like, this owns, this rules. This is what the game should have been from the beginning. This is, like, when... Sometimes when I'm doing research, I'll be crunching a little bit. I'll be doing it, like, the day of the recording, and I'll just be like, right, I'm putting this on at, like, 1.5 speed while I watch this, because I don't need all the pauses and stuff. Mm. And it's, like... I'm just, like, fully min-maxing it, and then I've got, like, something in another window where I'm, like, reading at the same time, and I'm, like, just maximizing my time. And this is something where I'm, like, yes, I don't feel like my soul's being sucked out. And I get to the boss battle, and you've got to, like, detonate, like, TNT next to the Googler in order to damage him. And that's actually running so fast that I'm, like, okay, no, I have to go back into, like, the actual proper speed. I do that, I beat him. It unlocks the next zone, but then at that point I'm just sort of like, I think I've seen everything this game has.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's going to be very short. It seems like it'll be maybe like 2 hours at the most, because that entire section I described was like 10-15 minutes of gameplay, and that's one of the like four worlds in the game. The next level I unlocked was like a big hedge maze, and there was like a bunch of like Freddy Krueger types going around like trying to attack you, and I was like, okay, well, that seems slightly more interesting at least. But it's like, oh god, I feel for the team that had to make it, but like, wow, I did not realize a PS2 game could look quite so bad and feel quite so budget. Yeah, it was just fascinating, because I'd always been curious about it, given that like the BBC doing a console game just feels odd.
It doesn't
feel like something they should be allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it should be illegal for BBC to like want to even do that,
to do anything outside of, like, it's like, because they're like a national institution. Mm-hmm. It's like they're funded by the public and stuff. It's like, well, they do stuff on PC or they don't do it
their
all.
Job is to do countryfolk calendars where otters are in funny situations for each month. It's not their job to be like, we're going to hire a developer to make, all the shit and like figure out what the Googler's animation style should be, the physics of the Googler. It shouldn't be their job.
I did actually find DeviantArt posts from one of the character artists from like 2006. He was like, here's some baddies I did for a PS2 game. Didn't do too well, but you know, here's some clowns and stuff. I was like, fair enough.
Here's the Googler.
Yeah, here's the Googler. Who does
the Googler.
I you zoomed in on the Googler, because he's one of those characters that like smurfizes all the words and like, I'm gonna Google you. I'm gonna Google Google out of you.
The thing about the Googler is that people's tax money went to funding the Googler. Or tax money, people's like license money went to funding the Googler. So technically, the Googler is owned by the people.
Yeah.
So
he's public domain in a way. They're saying so he can join the vault Googler, of Joe Hoops and Everett True.
The Googler is gonna be in my new horror film. Get Googled.
Like Blood and Honey, like mm-hmm. the fucking Winnie the Pooh. God. Yeah. I was going to say that this sort of the sidebar for this, and it was something I kind of wanted to explore in future, because looking at like the BBC's game publishing arm was kind of fascinating, because they sort of, this is one of the last big projects they do, and they sort of peace out right before the 360 era, because I think they can see how much it's going to cost to like actually make quality games.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, no, get out of here. But they buy a little studio called Runecraft, who are the guys that did that Westlife Fanmania game you were on
wizard.
About.
The Wizards.
Yes, the Wizards. And they renamed them Games Lab with a Z. Yeah. And yeah, that was the thing I zoomed in on when I got the GBA box in for Ace Lightning, was looking at the back and seeing Games Lab with a Z and being like, who the hell are these guys? And then looking it up and seeing that was literally the BBC's owned games developer subsidiary.
I recommend people look at the back of the box art for Westlife Phenomania, where the like lead guy from RuneCraft is posing with the band as if he's like a celebrity.
And it's all in Comic Sans, and he's like, this has all the best trivia about Westlife, and they're like, they're bigging the game up and stuff, and it's fantastic. But yeah, that was our sort of strangely parallel running dive into, I guess, the aim to get like tween boys as allowances. I don't know if there's a way to phrase that. It doesn't sound very sus. Yeah, the much clamored over 8-12 market or whatever. I just find that kind of stuff fascinating when they try to do these multimedia things, because I found out that Ace Lightning even had like KFC toys as well.
that's on the barrel. If you're going to the KFC for your toys, it's like, you know.
I think the only one below that would be like Wimpy. Yeah. I remember Wimpy had like fucking they I don't think they ever got anything for their like kids meals. They would just make shit up. I remember having like a little monkey on a skateboard. Even at the time, again, as a 6-year-old, you're just like, what is this? What are you doing, man? But yeah, that's the sicko mode deep dive on action figures, I suppose. What a strange episode we've just produced. Where can people find you, David, on the socials?
Well, I of course own the company House of Illuminati, based out of Glasgow.
Yes,
we're going through it right now, so we can appreciate your support.
Yeah, you're getting a lot of haters are reaching out.
We are. We're getting blasted for just, you know, being ourselves, our true selves, and bringing entertainment to the masses. And yeah. Look, you know what? If you don't want to support small business, I understand, but you know, lay off. You can also find us at FEWBAT.
Yes. If you have any questions about the Willie McDuff interactive experience, please direct them to Twitter user at Fubat.
Yeah, please do. But I'm not going to answer them. I'm sorry.
If you see anything, if you sickos see anything you think is funny about the Willie McDuff interactive experience, you send it to Fubat, and they'll get it scrubbed from the internet. Yes.
Look, we're hurting here, and we can use your support. Willie McDuff is a friend of mine. Know him since school. The unknown, he's my nephew. He needs your support as well, because, you know.
Yeah. He got a head injury that forced him to make AI generated images.
I have some breaking news, by the way. It was breaking news like 2 hours old. A second video of the unknown has landed on Twitter.
It's brilliant. Yeah, the unknown does have that sort of Ace Lightning energy, honestly. I can see it like coming out of a mirror and wreaking some havoc. I am at @my_crow. If you do actually want to follow me after that absolutely bonkers deep dive, I promise I don't just talk about strange action figures.
The Googler.
I will be pivoting to a Googler focused account. I think I've found my niche now. The podcast itself is at Gamer Era Podcast. We're on X, we're on Blue Sky, I called it X.
We're on Dr. X
is evil platform. Fucking whatever.
We're on Google.
We're on all the places, and we're on backlogged, where we'll be putting up all the games if for whatever reason you want to play any of them. Next week's gonna be interesting. I'm gonna hopefully get a guest format going, and we're gonna recharge our batteries a bit, so we're likely gonna take a week off. It's been very fun producing this show so far, but we've also both found that we really go ham on the research.
Yeah.
And producing that in a week every week for 12 weeks is
not great.
Yeah, it's a big ask. When we originally, we didn't announce this publicly because we wanted to see where we were going, but when we originally started recording, the idea was we were going to do a 12 episode season, and that's still very much the plan. But we're going to take a mid-season break, and then we're going to come back with another set of episodes, and then that'll sort of be like a season. Yeah, sorry, you were going to say something, David?
I was going to say, next week now, I don't have a segment next week, so I'll have time to work on something and also focus on my my Willy Wonka experience that I'm trying to expand to other locations. If you own a bottle of Tesco own brand lemonade and some glasses, I could really use your help right now. The unknown drank all my lemonade, and he won't get off the wall. He's on the walls. He won't come down. He's all hyped up. So I might need your help as well with that.
Okay. We'll link the GoFundMe in the description, of course. You know, it'll be a couple weeks out of date at that point, but out of date lemonade is actually quite cheap, I've heard. So help your cause.
Well, you know, I was already buying out of date lemonade anyway, so.
It's a fine vintage.
It's hard to take a stand. It's hard to do what's right. No matter how scared you are, you have to stand and fight. And we don't have to play this game all alone, cause there's a hero. There's a hero in us all. There's a hero. There's a hero in us all. There's a hero in us all.
Ever wonder what my name is? Yeah, so do I. Everyone calls me Action Man because I have amnesia and can't remember my real name. But even if I knew it, I still wouldn't give it out on the internet. Don't get me wrong, you can discover lots of cool things in cyberspace, but don't assume the strangers you meet in chat rooms are telling you their real names, ages, or sex. It's not like a phone call where you can hear their voice and know for sure. So, be careful. Don't give out your name, address, or phone number over the internet unless your parents say it's okay.